Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Scary movie love for scary movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and Scary Movie Month continues at FThisMovie.com with this very special episode on Amicus Horror Anthologies. I am joined for this very special Amicus episode by the Amicus person I know, Eric Asperschlager.
I'll be played by Peter Cushing tonight.
I will be played also by Peter Cushing.
He's good. We haven't gotten there yet, but as I was watching those, my first thought was, this is basically Peter Cushing meets Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Movie series.
Right.
Which
a series of different Doctor Who's. Yeah.
Basically, Doctors Who?
Who, I believe, is what that would be. They're all running together in my head. So we're going to talk about a number of different Amicus films, but I'm going to have a hard time keeping them straight.
It's okay. Me too. We'll let the audience at home can untangle the mystery of us talking.
And at the end, you'll find out that Eric and I were really dead all along. That's how they all end.
That
right?
That was my dead person impression.
Oh, got it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we are going to talk Amicus films, but please remember, we have about just over a week left in October, and we are still doing the Scary Movie Challenge over at FThisMovie.com. Anytime you watch a scary movie in the month of October, head over to FThisMovie.com, click on the Scary Movie Challenge tab, and leave a 7-word review. We're going to read some of our recent favorite 7-word reviews in just a minute, but first, I have to thank the sponsor of this episode, Kersey Resch. Thank you very much for your donation to FThisMovie.com and helping us fund hosting and different charges that come along with running a website and recording multiple podcasts a week. So thank you very much, Kersey, for your donation. Let's read some 7-word reviews because they've been very, very entertaining and funny. Eric, I will let you go first.
All right. I don't know which day this was from, but it doesn't really matter because I don't know when you guys are listening to this. So anyway, Stuart Gordon says of Rocky Horror Picture Show, Rocky's big organ can't beat Riff Raff's pipes.
What?
Pipes.
The Sonia Show says of The Tingler, The Tingler was inside you all along.
Kanji Chris of Psycho. Next time. Oh, this is the Psycho 1998. This is very important.
Oh, yeah.
I almost screwed that up. Okay. Next time, Exhume Hitchcock, have Corpse Direct.
This is a two-parter, but I have to read both from Eric W. Scream 1996. Genius Craven makes us like Jamie Kennedy. Scream 2, 1997. Genius Craven kills off Jamie Kennedy.
Almost did that one myself. Jeremy Wickett, Exorcist 2, The Heretic.
I have this one.
Okay. Was 70s cocaine like the best cocaine?
Thor Jensen. I'm going to try to read this in my best Tommy Wiseau voice of Hellraiser 1987. You're tearing me apart, Christy. Oh, hi, Pinhead.
I also have a Thor. I'm not going to say his whole name.
That's why I went Thor Jensen.
Thor Jen, perfect. Audition, 1999. That's it. I'm never dating anybody again.
Adam Story of The Beyond. This is one of my favorites, but it only works if you're well-versed in The Beyond. Tarantula rental is how much? 2, please.
Saul of It Follows. Guess this is post-horror?
Daniel Epler of Hatchet 2. Biggest problem? Film wasn't made in secret.
Cullen. I have it as Cullen. American Werewolf in London. Healthcare is much better in London.
Lauren Kelleher, who is a friend of mine. The Seventh Victim. Missing sister sequestered by several swinging Satanists.
Another one by Saul here. Gerald's Game. Extended PSA for iPhone's Hey Siri feature.
This is another two-parter from Lindsay Wilkins, but again, I thought they were both so funny that I have to read them both. Curse of Chucky, 2013. First one, extra bouncy eyeballs are the best eyeballs. Or the second one, Chucky doesn't have friends, he has family.
Next up, John C., The Witch. Anyone think this movie is the G-O-A-T?
I don't know if this is the same John C. This is John Kervan of The Thing, 1982. Stupid dog ruins epic Arctic dude bro bacchanal.
Will Benson, Shivers, justifies my phobia of Canadian sex murder parasites.
Richard, fear. Richard Tasker of Amityville 2, The Possession, still my favorite discovery of the month so far. This house really, This house really, really brings families closer.
Cade Tucker of Creep, add Mark Duplass to the dark universe.
And this is from our own Michael Pomero. Again, I usually try to avoid reading our own people, but sometimes they're so funny I can't help it. Of Leprechaun in the Hood, this movie has more cons than pros. And again, cons as in leprechauns. It works better when you read it.
I'm reading it right now because I also had that one written down.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Lindsay Wilkins of The Sentinel. Yeah, still worth it for that view.
Any more? I'm all out. So
okay,
you keep reading.
I'll do one more here. Lexi Van Dyke, The Haunted Mansion. Disney really spared all the expenses, huh?
Yes, thank you, Lexi, for posting some. I noticed after I was shaming some people that she jumped in and wrote some really funny reviews. So thank you, Lexi.
And you guys, you were seven word shaming people on Twitter, were you?
Not on Twitter, on the podcast. I was saying that I saw people posting on Twitter Scary Movie Month, but that they weren't leaving 7-word reviews, so I was shaming them.
Okay. And I believe that's called subtweeting.
I believe subtweeting if you're on a podcast?
I think it's pre-post subtweeting.
Oh, genius.
It's social tweeting.
So anyway, these are incredibly entertaining and funny and really specific. You know, I like the ones where the jokes are so specific about the movies. So keep it up, please. We still have a week left in October, and I would love to break last year's record of about 3,100. So let's try to get over that marker. Eric Asperschlager, have you seen anything scary lately?
Yes, I have. But first, is it okay if I talk about some movies that aren't scary?
Oh, sure.
All right, because here's the thing. I'm gonna be that guy. And I'm going to be that guy because I want to give a shout out, as the kids say, to a big local event. This weekend, the weekend we're recording this, was the first ever Seneca Film Festival in Watkins Glen, New York. And I got to go and check out one of the days. So I got to see most of the movies they were going to have. And it was really, 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 really fun. Not hugely well attended yet, but all the people who were there were really cool. Everyone was very excited. Some of the filmmakers were there. There were some Q&As. There was some, you know, small enough crowd that there was just general milling around and talking, in between movies and stuff, which was super cool. And it was put together by a guy named Eric Hollenbeck. I'll give him a shout out. He's a guy who worked in the industry for a long time. He was actually from this area where I live. But he's done a bunch of stuff. For example, he was one of the producers on Compliance.
Oh, wow.
And some other stuff that you may have heard of. He brought in, I'll go kind of rapid fire through some of the movies that I saw, cause some of them were awfully good. In fact, one of them was a horror movie, and I'll save that one for the end so I can segue.
Sweet.
I love to segue. But one of the filmmakers there is a guy named Blake Robbins, who is an actor. He's been in a bunch of stuff. He was in Oz. He was on The Office briefly. And his second movie called The Scent of Rain and Lightning, which is an adaptation of a novel that a girl who's kind of coming to grips with what happened to her parents who were killed, and the guy who was sent to jail for it has been released. And really cool, very atmosphere, kind of jumps back and forth. I enjoyed that one a whole lot. So if you see that, you can check that out. Not a scary movie, but, you know, I guess not a social thriller, just a thriller.
Sure.
Of sorts, you know, a mystery, which is good. Another one called Looking for the Jackalope, which is written and directed by a guy named Carl Scheffelman, who is who's been a storyboard artist for a long time. He's worked on a lot of movies back to 80s and 90s. I think he was a storyboard artist on some of Coppola's films and Silence of the Lambs and some other stuff. So just throwing out credits here. And this is sort of a kind of a comedy about a writer in New York who has a difficult time getting back to his college reunion, hitchhiking and all this kind of stuff to get back there to reconnect with his lost love and nostalgia and all that kind of stuff. So that's a good one. Keep an eye out for that one.
Is Dave Coulier involved in any way?
He is not involved in any way. I would say sad to say, but I'm not sad to say. Coulier is not part of it. There are definitely some people in the movie that I recognize. Larry Clark was one of the guys. I guess he was on Twin Peaks. I recognized him.
Okay.
He was kind of his friend. A really great documentary called Woman on Fire. It's about the first openly trans firefighter in New York City, a woman named Brooke Guinan, and just a really great profile of someone who has gotten a lot of attention for who she is, but also just the people in her life, her family, and the man she's engaged to, and just not only about being trans, but also just about being a person and being a firefighter and what that's like and all that kind of stuff. So that was super cool. And I'll also give a shout out to a short film called Truce, which is a 15-minute film about PTSD. It was written by a guy who I think was in the Vietnam War, so it's kind of a very personal thing. And it's interesting to learn because some of the filmmakers were there for that as well. The producers and the makeup artist and one of the actors. And it was a film that was shot over the course of a day for about $1,000. It's kind of they described it as a labor of love. You could tell that it was. And I will tie that, however, to horror, because the interesting thing is the two women who were there, the producer and the makeup artist, the producer who worked on a documentary for the ESPN 30 for 30 about the Boston gambling fix. It was kind of part of Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Yeah. She apparently started her career as a stand-in, and she was in Innocent Blood as a stand-in.
Okay.
Which I've never seen, but is that a vampire movie?
It is.
Or am I totally, it is. Okay.
It's all really right. Fun. It's John Landis.
Right.
It's like vampires and mobsters. It's really fun.
And the makeup artist was there, who was very sweet, very nice. She was kind of, talking about some of her credentials and just kind of happened to mention offhand that she worked on a ton of George Romero's films. Mm. Like she was the makeup artist for Dark Half and Monkey Shines and a bunch of stuff. So it was cool. It was neat to meet these people.
Yeah,
and talk to them. Okay, so the one horror movie that they showed, because unlike every other film festival happening right now, it was not a horror film festival. But I did get to see, apparently it was a world premiere, I think it's still in post-production, a movie called Faceless, which was directed and co-written by a guy named, I hope I don't say it wrong, Marcel Sarmiento, who I think is responsible for he did one of the segments in VHS Viral and one of the segments in ABCs of Death. It co-stars Alex Esso, who I know you're a big fan of and I'm a big fan of. And it's basically there's a guy who kind of his face is damaged. He has it removed and replaced with someone else's face. And then it kind of has to figure out what's going on from there. And there's a really cool effect throughout the movie. I assume it's done with CGI, but it really works. It's very subtle that the kind of his transplanted face is sort of kind of drooping and kind of half melting for most of the movie as it's kind of his body sort of projecting it,
mm-hmm.
which is a pretty cool look. It goes to some weird places, has some good twists and turns. And I definitely would recommend it if, I assume it's going to hit sometime next year, probably, if it hits VOD or comes around. Faceless is it's pretty cool.
Awesome. You had me at Alex Esso.
I know. She's super, super great in it. A lot of good people in it. Some good gore effects, as you can imagine, for a movie about someone's face being
right
soft. So definitely the festival will be over by the time you hear this. But hopefully if you were anywhere in the vague in the area, I guess, of where I live. First off, I don't have a guest room, so please don't stop by. But yeah, definitely next year. I'm hoping next year it's an even bigger. And it was definitely cool. So shout out to everyone involved and put it on your radar. So
that's awesome. I'm really glad that you were able to go and to bring some attention to those movies. That's really cool that you're talking about them.
It was. No, it was great. So your original question was, did I watch anything scary?
Yes.
Yes. And I will go through them quickly because I've already monopolized a lot of time. And it's been a long month and the month is almost over. And I've watched a lot of stuff. Fortunately, a lot of what I've been watching recently falls under the category of our main topic.
Oh, nice.
So I don't have to cover those here.
Right.
Because I will do that later. but I a lot of the beginning of the month somehow ended up being not full series of movies. But I kind of ended up doing a bunch of pairings, whether I didn't do it on purpose, but kind of worked out that way. Like I watched House and House 2, the second story.
Okay.
And I'd seen House before. I don't know why. I think they were on – maybe they were on Shudder. I did my – you know, I signed up for Shudder for a month like everyone else.
Nice.
And so those were, you know, I like the first one better than the second one.
Yeah, me too. I like the first one a lot, and I'm not crazy about the second one.
No. I mean, it's – you know, it's – I like to think of them as being part of the Cheers shared universe. I don't know if that's actually true. You know, Cheers. TV show Cheers. But the one,
no, okay, I got it.
I'll explain it to you if you need me.
It's just such a weird choice that they thought, like, we got to cast someone from Cheers in this. I don't know.
It was. I mean, it worked in the first movie. I mean, George Wendt is great and everything. And I'm a big fan of John Ratzenberger as well. His part in the second one is, I mean, the second one's just not really very scary.
No, it's not. It's not really a horror movie. I mean,
right. It's more of just a house related adventure,
wacky fantasy that with puppets that I'm just not crazy about it.
Yeah. Much more enjoyable. I watched, skipped right to the end. I watched Curse of Chucky and Cult of Chucky, and it's been a long time since I've seen the original. I've never been a huge Chucky guy. I don't know why. They're fine. The ones I've seen, I've enjoyed all right. But I don't know. I mean, I know that killer dolls are inherently scary in some way, but they're also kind of not to me. I don't know. I mean, I know, like, for instance, I know you are not a ghost story guy. I'm a big ghost story guy. I actually watched Stir of Echoes a few weeks ago, and so I got to enjoy your, you know, wonderful podcast recently.
Well, thank you.
No, yeah, it wasn't. But Chucky, I think when it's just kind of an actual like horror thing, I like the first Child's Play, but I think it seems to work much better with a bit of tongue planted in cheek, and also I'm super into like the kind of mythology building, you know, connected characters, multi film storytelling that they're doing here. It's a lot of fun, even though I'm sure that I'm missing tons of references and some of the appearances of people in post credit scenes and stuff. I'm
right.
Not understanding all of the subtleties.
I never would have called myself a Chucky guy either, because I like the first one a real lot, and then other entries, like some I can tolerate, some I can just leave, some I like more than others. But Cult of Chucky, I really had such a good time with that. It's so much like Fast Five for me, where it's right. Like everything clicked into place, and all of a sudden it makes all the preceding movies seem better because you feel like, oh, it's all just been building up to this. And so now I consider myself much more of a fan of the series because I liked this movie a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a lot of fun with both of those. Yeah. So that was super cool. And Fiona Dourif is really great.
Yeah, she is.
I will save the last pairing until for the end, because I think it'll lead into something you're going to talk about. But I also, for the first time, saw Tales of Halloween.
Okay.
For whatever reason, I kind of never got around to seeing, which, and I maybe I was saving it for a Scary Movie Month. Let's pretend that's the case. But whatever it was, I really liked that movie a whole lot. I think a theme that we're going to return to later in the episode is that anthology movies, which I love, are actually better than I think they are. Meaning I've kind of had this sense for a long time that horror anthology movies are great in that I love them, but there are so few good ones. And I feel like this month the needle is kind of tipped over, and I'm like, oh, maybe there are actually more good ones than I think there are, and that on balance, they're pretty good. And Tales of Halloween was a lot of fun, especially with that many entries.
Yeah. You know, did you have a favorite segment?
I'm sure that I did. It was a week or so ago. I mean, the opening, the starting with the Sweet Tooth one, I thought that was pretty.
Yeah.
That was a memorable way to open the open it up. And I'm glad that there was such a wide variety from you know, witches and ghosts and even aliens. That one with the alien and the slasher was cool too. So I will need to go back and rewatch it with your commentary at some point.
Do you though?
Well, I will. I do. I know you don't think that anyone would want to, but we do.
Let me ask you this about anthologies, not to get you off topic, because we're going to be talking about anthologies in a little bit. But you had said, you know, there's maybe more good ones than bad ones, or at least more good ones than you think, not necessarily more than bad ones.
Yeah.
And I would tend to agree with that. And I feel like does more than 50% good segments a successful anthology make? Do you know what I mean? If at least half the segments are good, are you like, yeah, okay, then that was a good movie?
I think that, you know, watching scary movies during October, automatically makes you appreciate whatever movie you're watching a little bit more than if you're watching any other month of the year.
Yeah.
And part of that is that watching so many scary movies in a row, or generally in a row every day or every 2 days, You get into a rhythm of this stuff, and I watched a bunch of anthologies recently. And so I feel like if I were to watch an anthology just kind of out of the blue in, you know, March, and it was the first one I'd seen in a while, and it was kind of all riding on this one thing and half of the segments were good, I might feel like, you know, maybe that was okay. It wasn't great. But I think at this point right now on, October 22nd or whatever, yes, if an anthology has more than as at least half, I think I'm in.
Because I think that's how I feel too, and I think that's going to come up in our discussion of the Amicus films. And yet, I feel like for another horror film, if it's only half good, I'm not necessarily walking away from it feeling like, yeah, that was good. You know, I might point to the things I like, but I wouldn't recommend the movie overall. Whereas with an anthology, I might.
Yeah, we will. Let's put a pin in that.
All right,
as the kids say,
it's pinned.
I don't think kids say that. And then we'll come back to that later for sure. And then so the last twofer that I watched, and I do want to watch the third one, haven't gotten around to it yet, is that I finally saw Hatchet and Hatchet 2.
Okay.
Which I really, really liked.
Oh, good.
A whole lot. Even though the version of Hatchet 2 that I saw was the R-rated version on Amazon and not the unrated one. But it was – I mean, I saw a lot of blood. I saw a lot of stuff.
I think I get it.
if there's one thing that I've learned – you know, great sense of humor, memorable villain, you know, great kills. The one thing that I've learned from watching the Hatchet movies is that the human body is way more fragile. You look at it wrong and like, you know, a limb will just tear off, I think is what I've learned. I mean, I feel bad forever, you know, just, you know, bumping into someone on the street. I'm afraid that their rib cage is going to fly out. I just, you know, I get very nervous.
It's true. It's so true.
It's great for those movies.
I think it's the R-rated cut of Hatchet 3 that's also on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. And that's the I haven't watched that yet. I've been meaning to, although for some reason I got the general sense from you talking about it that it's not as good. Although I'll definitely watch it because I've come this far.
Yeah, I definitely think it's worth watching, and I've grown to like it more than I did originally. I think when I saw it when it first came out, I was kind of like, this might be pushing its luck. But as a bigger fan of the series these days, I enjoy it more. Like, I just rewatched it yesterday leading up to Victor Crowley, as you were kind of teeing me up for. And I had a pretty good time with it. I mean, again, it's the one that Adam Green did not direct, but he was very much involved in the writing and the production, and it certainly feels bigger. You know, there's a much bigger cast and body count, and it has more of kind of an action movie vibe to a lot of it there's a whole kind of SWAT team aspect. So yeah, I definitely think it's obviously worth checking out if you've watched the other two, because again, it is a direct continuation of one and two. You know, it all kind of forms together to be one big movie.
And I can't think of another movie, let alone horror movie, that I've seen that just ends the way that these movies end. And I mean, I'm glad I was able to watch two right after one, because it's a fascinating choice, and I am, you know, I'm more than willing to say good job, go for it.
minus the switch in actor.
That was, you know, hey, but I watched Bewitched. I'm not new. This is not new to me. You know, I grew up with Nick at Night. I can handle, a change in actor. Kids today, maybe not so much.
No. They might not even notice it's a different person. anything else that you want to mention?
No. Let's go on to you.
Okay. Yeah. I will talk about Victor Crowley, as you so nicely set up for me. Last night, I had the pleasure of introducing the Chicago screening of Victor Crowley and doing the Q&A with writer-director Adam Green. It is the fourth film in the Hatchet franchise. Most of you may know already, having read about it, that it was made in secret completely over the last 2 years. No one knew he was making a new Hatchet film. He had a 10th anniversary Hatchet screening in L.A., scheduled, and so the audience showed up, sat down, he got up to introduce the screening and said, yeah, I'm not going to show you Hatchet, instead here's a brand new movie I was working on, here's Hatchet 4. And so that was how he revealed it, which is, you know, incredibly exciting. I don't really want to say anything about the movie, because he's been very adamant about, like, hey, don't spoil anything, so I won't get into any specifics, except to say it is a continuation of the story, but it takes place 10 years later. So it's not directly connected the way the first three are, that they're all part of the same roughly 48 hours. This jumps ahead 10 years and then continues the story with one of the characters. If you are a fan of the first three Hatchet films, there's no reason why you wouldn't enjoy this one. I think it was probably the funniest of the three, as well as I think having some of the most interesting sequences. There are some things that he's trying to do that's really different, where there's actual suspense to some of the moments, because none of the first three movies are really trying to be suspenseful or scary at all. And I think this movie is trying to do that a little bit more, which I really appreciated. I had a really, really good time with it.
Cool. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I don't know really what the plan is, you know, in terms of its release. I'm guessing it will get some sort of a limited theatrical or VOD release sometime early next year, or it may just pop up on Blu-ray and DVD. I'm not really sure. But yeah, people should check it out if you're a fan of the series. If you haven't liked the series up to this point, I can't imagine that there's going to be anything in Victor Crowley where you are turned around on the whole thing. I revisited the 1931 Dracula, which I think was one of my picks last week for the streaming recommendations. I couldn't remember the name of the column. You stream. I think I had recommended, because Shudder just added a bunch of the classic Universal monster movies. And while I recognize that Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein are probably better movies because James Whale is an amazing director, my heart belongs to Dracula in this very weird way. I recognize that it's very slowly paced. It doesn't all work, but it casts such a spell over me every time I watch it. And so much of that obviously has to do with Bela Lugosi's performance, but also the music, the lack of music, the silences, the photography. I love how sort of influenced by German Expressionism Todd Browning is. I just will always be such a mark for the original Dracula. So I don't know that I would say it's my favorite of the Universal monster movies, because I do love Bride of Frankenstein. I love The Wolfman. I love The Invisible Man, which again is James Whale. But Dracula kind of gets a bad rap, and I will not speak ill of that movie because I love it.
Yeah, for the past three or four scary movie months, I've told myself that I'm going to watch all of the Universal horror movies, and then October 31st rolls around, that it's like, oh, next year I'm watching all of the universe.
You know what you should watch instead of all the Universal Monster movies is this movie called Mirrors with Kiefer Sutherland.
Heard of that.
Yeah. I have too. I haven't seen it, but I hear it's very scary.
Mirrors. Okay. All right.
The last movie that I will talk about is, I think, was this the movie that you and I were emailing about, 1922?
Yes, and I still, as of now, I've read, you know, I'm sure I've read the story. I could not tell you what it is about.
It just showed up on Netflix this past Friday, and I didn't realize it when I watched it. It is written and directed by a filmmaker named Zach Hilditch, who made a movie, an Australian film, I believe. I don't know if it's Australian. It called These Final Hours a couple years ago, which is essentially about what the world does just prior to the apocalypse. Basically, it follows one character who's trying to maybe do one more good thing before the world ends. And it's very much worth seeing. It used to be on Netflix. It might still be, but that's very much worth seeing. And he's a talented director. So he made 1922, which comes from Full Dark, No Stars, and is is this the third adaptation from, what are the, I know A Good Marriage is one of them. The one about the rape, which I think is being adapted. Hold on, I'm looking up what the titles are. Big Driver is the one that I'm thinking of. That's the one rape, and it's pretty unpleasant. And
yeah, I don't want to watch that.
Fair Extension. I don't remember what Fair Extension is. Anyway, oh wait. Now I remember. It's pretty short, actually. That's why I don't remember it. So 1922 is about a farmer in 1922 and his son and his wife, and the wife wants to sell the farm and move into the city, and the husband does not, and the son does not, and so they take matters into their own hands.
Okay, does sound familiar.
Yeah, and so it's really, I mean, there's a murder. I guess that's kind of a spoiler. Most of the movie is about how difficult it is to get away with a murder, whether it's 1922 or 2017. And it's not just physically removing evidence and making up a story to cover your tracks. It's also the psychological toll that that kind of a thing takes. And I think the movie's really well made. I recognize not everybody's going to love it. Thomas Jane is doing something kind of different for him. You know, he's hit or miss for me as an actor, but I thought he was good in this. And I just admire the movie's sort of single-minded determination to be very grim and very dark, and to not really pull any punches when it comes to that material. You know, reading, I still think it works better as a short story, but I think it's a good adaptation of what I would have considered a very difficult to adapt short story, which is interesting coming right off of Gerald's Game from Mike Flanagan, which I also would have said, well, that's unfilmable, and Mike Flanagan found a way to do it. I wouldn't call 1922 unfilmable, but I think this adaptation does a much better job than I could have expected. So it's a movie I really recommend.
It's kind of in line with my whole feeling at the moment that, like, you know, anthologies, which I've always thought to be kind of bad, maybe they're good. I thought they were bad. Now all of a sudden it's like Stephen King adaptations, they're usually not very good. Now it's like they're pretty good. We got a well, whole run.
We're in a good year for them. Yeah, absolutely.
I live in the now, Patrick. This is my.
And we're building up to Castle Rock on Hulu, which is just like Stephen King super fan show, which I'm very excited about and can only disappoint me.
Absolutely.
But between 1922 and Gerald's Game and It, we've been pretty blessed with good Stephen King this year. I did not watch Mr. Mercedes.
Nor me.
I liked that book, I think Brendan Gleeson is perfect casting for that character, but I did not watch the show.
Not to be a downer, it seemed like it hit right. No, that's a bad word. It seemed like it came out around the same time of, you know, that the murder in Charlotte.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Virginia. Yeah. So that made me also not really want to watch it because it's, you know, there's one thing about being timely. There's one thing about being, you know, it's not, Stephen King didn't do it, but yeah, still,
right,
I don't know.
Right, right.
It's rough. Anyway, yes, it's a good year for Stephen King.
It is. And I recommend 1922, currently streaming on Netflix. I feel like every week Netflix has given us, you know, we had Gerald's Game, we had The Babysitter, which I didn't love, but at least it was a new horror movie for us all to watch on Netflix. And now 1922. So thank you, Netflix. And then next week is Stranger Things, which I know people are super excited about. I'm a little bit less excited, but I'll still totally check it out.
Yeah. I think I'm leaning a little bit more toward your camp, but yeah, totally new stuff.
Right. Thanks for new stuff. So we're going to talk about Amicus Anthologies, but before we do that, we have a very special Scary Movie Month surprise, a second Scary Movie Month surprise, actually, because you all may remember when we started Scary Movie Month, we premiered a new song from singer-songwriter Eric Asperschlager called That's the Twist, which many of you listened to and enjoyed and perhaps downloaded. No, they didn't download it.
Not yet. Keep an eye out. There may be news on that coming soon.
Well, wait until we can buy an album from iTunes. I think that's the way to do it once you've got enough songs. But anyway, great feedback on that song. The song was awesome. And
thank you
to introduce this new surprise, I will turn it over to you, sir.
Yeah, well, for some reason, my brain doesn't stop working, and came up with a whole other song that is also Scary Movie Month related, adjacent. I'm not sure. I don't know. I know, Patrick, you've heard it. It's called You've Changed.
That's
and,
right.
And I won't specifically say what it's about, other than it is someone who encounters an acquaintance at night and notices that something maybe not quite right about them. So I hope everyone enjoys it. You're going to be forced to listen to it right now.
Thank you.
I think you've got another hit on your hands, sir.
Well, I hope so. It's going to be tearing up the charts, whatever that means.
No, thank you so much for, you know, sharing these songs with our listeners and our community. And you are an incredibly talented human being. And I feel very fortunate not just to have you on the podcast and writing for us, but also now sharing your musical abilities with us. I was saying to you just in an email, I know you had said that you didn't have a ton of experience with recording or production prior to starting to record some of these songs, and I cannot believe how good you are at it in just a short amount of time. So thank you so much. Thank you.
There's so much talent, obviously, on FS Movie. You guys have your encyclopedic knowledge of film, ability to write, ability to turn around content quickly. I'm glad I finally have something that I can say, I can do this. All right, maybe I can't do a column every week. Maybe I don't watch enough movies, but I can do this. So that's good.
No, it's awesome. And so if people want to hear this song, not, you know, having to fast forward 35 minutes through our podcast episode, yeah, or if they want to hear more stuff from you, where can they find that?
I've got a SoundCloud page. That's where I'm going to be putting stuff up to stream, and that's soundcloud.com/Eric-Asperschlager. I'd spell it for you, but I'm sure I'm not even sure how to spell my own name.
Just look in the episode description, you'll see it there. But yeah, everybody check out Eric's music, and I'm serious, when you have like 10 or 12 songs, just put an album together on iTunes.
There are plans, there are percolations. Nice. there are things, so one at a time. One scary movie month.
Yeah, right.
Well, two every scary movie month in like 6 years when I'm 75. I'm not that old. Or am I? I don't know. Should we talk about Amicus and
Let's do it, because the twist is you've been old all along.
I can feel it. I really feel that way sometimes.
Crazy thing is, you know, we had planned for a couple of weeks to do this show on Amicus anthologies, and there were a bunch of these made in the 60s and 70s in England. For those of you who don't know, it was a British film production company. They put together a bunch of movies, had a lot of success with anthologies, so they made a bunch of these movies. We're going to talk about most of them, but not a few, right? Like, we're skipping Dr. Terror's House of Horrors, which was their first anthology.
Now, I actually watched that one.
Well, you're a better man than me, so we will talk about it.
Okay, we'll talk about it briefly. I'm just one at the end. I'm sure that you watched it. I didn't, but we'll... Do you want to go through them and we'll say yay or nay if we watch them? Or do you want to just go through it and just...
So we have Dr. Terror's House of Horrors, which you watched.
I did watch.
We have Torture Garden. Did you watch that one?
I did watch that.
Okay, so did I. The House That Dripped Blood, I watched.
I watched that one too.
Tales from the Crypt, I watched.
Watched that one too.
Asylum, I watched.
Yes.
Vault of Horror.
Yes.
Okay, that one I did not rewatch, so I apologize. Okay, I have seen it, but I didn't rewatch it. And From Beyond the Grave, I've never seen.
I haven't seen it either.
Okay. So we're going to skip that. No, we're going to skip them, but that's not bad.
No, that's pretty good. Next year, our big From Beyond the Grave.
There's going to be an accompanying song that goes along with it.
I've already got the From Beyond. Okay, we'll figure it out.
Each verse will be about a different doctor. And a lot of these were new to me this month. I had only seen Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror, so the others I had never seen. So it's a lot to cram in, because not only are we watching, you know, in my case, three or four new movies, and you're watching even more than that because you watched Dr. Terror's House of Horrors, but, you know, there's five or six segments in each, so it feels like you're watching way more movies than you actually are. Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, it is kind of like binge watching a TV show.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, kind of like Tales from the Crypt, for example. I mean, it has sort of that feeling because they are so kind of similar in style and, production and actors, obviously. But, this is actually, I will give credit for this. I mean, I've always wanted to do an anthology podcast, both because I find it so difficult to pick one movie to talk about, and also because I'm a big fan, as you know, of anthology movies, as we said. Certainly with coming up with That's the Twist, I thought, hey, synergy, branding, you know, all
other
those kind of things.
Corporate marketing words. I got it.
SEO, that sort of thing. I thought that'd be good. So when I originally, you know, I think before the month started, and I'd sent you that's the twist, and I sent to Adam to get his, because I thought he might enjoy it too, and he said he did. And he said, oh, like, you know, have you seen the Amicus movies? And Amicus, what's that? So that kind of started. So credit to Adam Risky for turning me on to the stuff that I kind of peripherally knew about but hadn't really explored. So had a tip of the hat.
Yeah. He's been a fan for several years. Yeah. And so while we were in the process of planning this show and going through and watching all the movies, Severin Films announced a boxed set of Amicus films. And now there's only one anthology, I believe, which is Asylum. Because then they're also doing The Beast Must Die and the other movie. Wait for it. shoot. And now the screaming starts.
Yeah. Apparently there was a DVD set that had Asylum and Now the Screaming Starts and The Beast Must Die. So maybe this is sort of a better looking version of that set. Is there a fourth movie on the upcoming?
There's not. So this is the first time they will appear on Blu-ray. The fourth
Blu-ray.
Disc is actually a collection of trailers, I think, for all the Amicus films.
That's cool.
Which is, yeah, that's incredible. So I'm pretty excited about that. That comes out in December, but that was just announced a few days ago. So I got very excited because I'm all deep in Amicus right now.
Oh, we're,
and
yeah.
we're all in it. So since Dr. Terror's House of Horrors comes first, how about you speak to that a little bit? Because again, I haven't seen it.
Sure. Let me see if I can remind myself what's actually in this.
Which doctor was in it?
Yes, exactly. Now, I'll say before we start, one thing that I do love about this and reading about the Amicus movies is that I kept coming across not only, you know, using the word anthology to describe these, but calling these portmanteau films,
right?
Which I think is great. I mean, I'm super ready to just talk about horror portmanteaus films from here on out. You know, screw anthology. It's portmanteau. Sorry.
I was watching this portmanteau last night called Creepshow.
Exactly. Just it rolls off the. No, it doesn't. Dr. Terror's House of Horrors stars so Peter Cushing, of course.
You don't say. Yes.
No, I know he is the title character, Dr. Terror. The House of Horrors is not a house, but is a train. Actually, it's not the train. So he comes in,
and there are no horrors.
No, there are no horrors. It's actually more of a. It's a contemplation of
the
British state of mind after World War II, and centers on a romance between a doctor, his name is Dr. Terror, and his blushing fiance, whose name is Gore Bloodington. No, you can cut that part out. All right, so there are five men in a train car. And they are joined by Dr. Terror. And his House of Horrors is actually a tarot deck that he uses to show them how their lives might end should they continue on in their
so
paths.
It's every Amicus movie.
It is every Amicus, absolutely every Amicus movie. I mean, the stories. It also stars Christopher Lee. So that's different.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, that's exactly all the same. But it's great because we love Peter Cushing and we love Christopher Lee. And it stars a little actor named Donald Sutherland.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the guys in a vampire-related segment, which is pretty cool. So Dr. Terror, it's got a pretty good variety of stuff. Probably the weirdest segment in this one is about a killer plant that terrorizes a family in their home. It's like a creeping vine that defends itself and even murders a dog off screen.
Yikes.
Sorry, spoilers for Dr. Although I don't feel so bad about it because before the dog is killed, you hear the dog barking and it's obviously some dude just making a barking noise, which is great. I mean, I think the thing I love about these the DIY quality, it's like it's just a combination of like high British drama and like we just, you know, slap some orange paint on someone and now they're covered in blood. It's just, it's a beautiful thing. Dr. Terror is certainly worth checking out. It's you know, I think they're kind of pulling things together, but it has all of the there's certain, I think it foretells some of the segments they'll do later on. There's some similarities between the Christopher Lee segment, which is about an art critic who gets revenge and then has revenge taken upon him, which mirrors the Tom Baker segment in Vault of Horror a little bit later on. But so there's a little bit of that, but it's got vampire stuff, it's got werewolves, it's got art critics, all the villains. So it's good. It's worth checking out. I think it's actually available on Blu-ray as well.
Okay.
So,
how did you watch it?
I watched it on YouTube.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I couldn't find it any other way, and I couldn't justify spending even more money on these sets. But it was good enough that I will.
Okay.
So, sorry to the film snobs out there. Sorry to the Christopher Lee art critics, but sometimes research purposes, I am a bad person.
I ask only because I was going to feel bad if you were like, "Oh, it's streaming easily on Amazon Prime or Shudder." I was going to beat myself up.
If it was, we would watch it. It was the last one I watched because it was like, "Oh, someone, you know, threw this up there." So, got to see what's up with this. So I checked it out. Anyway,
I will need to track that down. It being their first stab at an anthology, a portmanteau. Did you find it to be rougher than the ones that would follow?
Not really. I mean, it's kind of in line. I mean, there are some segments even in some of the later films. I feel like The House That Dripped Blood has a segment or two that kind of feel on par as far as kind of rough edges.
Okay.
So no, I mean, I think these all have, you know, that sort of looseness to them, which I like. I think it's what I like about portmanteaus in general. We're gonna do this, aren't we? I kind of like the predictability. I like the rhythm. I like the, you know, I mean, sure, I can figure out what's gonna happen generally. It's kind of like watching, it's like watching Looney Tunes cartoons for me, sort of. It's you know, the Roadrunner is gonna make the coyote go off the cliff. The fun is seeing how they get there.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right,
and even if you guess the twist, I love a twist. I love a twist. As I think about this in general, like, as I was trying to figure out why I'm such a big fan of the portmanteau of anthology films, and I think that. I realized that as a kid, like short stories, horror stories, twist ending stories were really my entree into horror in general, because it was pretty late in life that I was watching horror movies. I wasn't necessarily that I grew up in a super strict household, although I don't think that, you know, I would have been allowed to rent R-rated movies in general, horror movies or not. I didn't have enough friends to go over there, to go to their houses to watch these things in secret. So I really missed out on the horror movies of the 80s when I was growing up, aside from, you know, some random kid describing to me the kills in Friday the 13th or something. So what I would do, though, but I had free reign to go, you know, check out whatever books I wanted from the library. So I was, you know, that's when I started reading a lot of Stephen King, you know, arguably younger than maybe I should have for some of the content or... you know, and not necessarily strictly horror short stories, but, you know, reading anthology, reading Ray Bradbury, reading like Twilight Zone collections, reading Hitchcock magazines, reading Roald Dahl's short stories. I mean, all I love that stuff so much. I loved, you know, I was at age 12 or 13. I was like writing my own. Sure, they weren't very good, but I had so much fun coming up with the twists. So this is a long time coming for me, for sure. So this is really like where I began my love of scary stuff. So here we are, full circle.
And anthologies, I feel like, are so watchable because it's a blank slate every 10 to 15 minutes. Even if one sucks, it's like you're willing to give the next one the benefit of the doubt. So I will watch almost any anthology. I went to see Snoop Dogg's Hood of Horror in a theater because I was like, well, that's an anthology. I was by myself in that theater.
It's the same. I mean, I'm glad that I finally got to the point where I feel like anthology movies are good or can be good.
Yes.
Because for the longest time, it was like, I love anthology movies, even though they're terrible most of the time. And yeah, we have that the whole like 50% or more.
Right.
And I think it also kind of depends how you gauge the quality of these things, because you could watch any of these Amicus movies and find them to be a bit cheesy or, you know, low budget or, you know, whatever. I mean, there are some questionable special effects and all that kind of stuff, but just the spirit behind it and the fact that you're watching an anthology movie and it's fun and there are twists and all this kind of stuff. It works for me in a big way.
They have a specific vibe, you know, as a diehard horror fan. There are certain subgenres of horror, or rather almost like studio umbrellas, that have their own certain vibe. So Universal Monsters feel a certain way. And so you can watch any Universal Monster movie because it gives you that feeling. Or you can watch any Hammer movie because it gives you a certain feeling. The way it sounds, the way it looks, the way the colors are, the way it's shot. I can watch any, you know, Roger Corman, Edgar Allan Poe adaptation with Vincent Price because of the vibe, the way it looks, the way it feels, the way it sounds, Vincent Price. And Amicus Films also have that same kind of, at least their anthologies, because I haven't seen all of their other stuff, but the anthologies have a very specific feel to them. And so even a movie like the next one we're going to talk about, which I did not love, and that is Torture Garden from 1968. I didn't love it, but it's super watchable because, again, it has a certain vibe that all of these anthologies, you know, produced by Amicus share. And so even the ones that I'm not as crazy about, like, I'm totally fine sitting through because it makes me feel a certain way. There's something comforting about sitting in the presence of these Amicus anthologies.
Yeah, and I know that most of these were, or a good number of them were written by Robert Bloch, the guy who wrote Psycho, obviously.
Yeah.
They all kind of have the feeling of the EC Comics stories, which is obviously where Tales in the Crypt and the Vault of Horror came from, both titles of EC Comics. So they, you know, they didn't just emerge out of the Transom Holy Forum as their own thing. These are kind of like the EC Comics filtered through British sensibilities, and
right.
Which I guess will create its own very specific sort of vibe, kind of a mixture of buttoned up, uptight, and you know, really kind of loosey goosey. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know,
that's right. You know, loosey goosey.
The second Amicus portmanteau is Torture Garden from 1968, which is once again directed by Freddie Francis, who also directed Dr. Terror's House of Horrors and would go on to also direct Tales from the Crypt. So he's responsible for a number of these anthologies from Amicus. I had never seen Torture Garden and didn't realize that it was streaming on Shudder, so I actually bought a Blu-ray I found at Target for like $7, and it has three movies on it. Brotherhood of Satan, which I've never seen, Creeping Flesh, which I've never seen, and Torture Garden. So I now own Torture Garden, even though I don't love it.
That's all right.
But again, it has – so this was the first – I had only seen Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror. So Torture Garden was the next one that I saw, and I was amazed to realize, oh, wait a second. This is that same kind of a structure where a group of strangers meets a person who then tells each of them a story about, you know, them dying. And then at the end, it's like, oh, but you're actually dead. And in this case, it's Burgess Meredith who is telling the stories. This is the one that has the creeping vine. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. I had pulled up the summary and I was like, I don't remember this having a creeping vine.
They all have creeping vines.
Yeah, right?
That's the twist.
So this has, what, four stories?
Yeah.
Enoch, Terror Over Hollywood, Mr. Steinway, and The Man Who Collected Poe, which stars Jack Palance and, surprise, surprise, Peter Cushing, and I will say was probably my favorite of the four segments.
Yeah.
I'm having a hard time remembering the other three.
Well, Mr. Steinway. Steinway is the clue.
Well, yeah.
It's probably, yeah, that's kind of the, I think the killer piano one is probably the weakest. I'm just going to go on a limb and say, I think these are, if I'm not mistaken, these were all based on Robert Bloch existing short stories.
I believe you are right.
I have not read any of them. I imagine that a story of a killer piano is a little bit more elegant in print, but I could be wrong. I guess so. The movie Torture Garden was supposed to star Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee in the roles that were eventually played by Burgess Meredith and Jack Palance, right, because it was made by Columbia. Although the interesting thing about Amicus in general, which we haven't said, is that it's a British film production company, but it's run by a couple of Americans.
Right.
We have this like, you know, British sensibility, but it's actually an American British sensibility. I don't know what's going on here. This is all very confusing, and I probably am dead because I don't understand. But Torture Garden has some decent stuff. I mean, I like the one about the Hollywood one a little bit more. I think it ended up in a place that didn't feel so much like a horror movie as it did maybe a Twilight Zone episode, but
yeah.
That's fine with me. I didn't mind that. I mean, there's kind of has a bit of a Richard Matheson quality in that regard. What are the other ones? Enoch. What's Enoch? I think that's the one with the cat. Yeah. Which I thought was pretty, it worked.
Maybe I need to revisit it. I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like, you know, and again, with these anthologies, I feel like saying it worked is probably like the highest praise. But it was, I mean, you know, I've watched these things like right in a row. So it's kind of like, I think it's almost like episodes of a season of a TV show. It's like, oh yeah, that season was okay. The other seasons were a little bit better. You know, it ends in a way that you'd expect it to, the whole thing ends in a way you expect it to end, and they all end. And
right.
what it is, although I guess this may be, I guess, slight spoilers. This is the only one where the guy, people aren't actually dead at the end.
No, but Burgess Meredith is the devil, right?
Yes.
Which, yeah. I have never anticipated the devil looking like Burgess Meredith.
He's always the one you least suspect.
I mean, I enjoyed Jack Palance's performance quite a bit. Peter Cushing's always welcome. But yeah, on the whole, and again, maybe I just need to revisit it because I think maybe my expectations were a little bit high, having been a fan of Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror, and then feeling like, oh, these shorts are not quite up to the standards, and this doesn't have quite as much punch as those films, and felt longer, even though I don't think it is. In terms of its runtime, I don't think it's actually that much longer, but it felt long to me.
Yeah, I think it's one of the longer ones. Okay. I could certainly see... I watched them in a different order than you entirely. I watched The House That Dripped Blood first, and then I kind of went back, I think, to think of maybe Asylum and then Torture Garden. So I didn't get to Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror until the end. And those do have a different feel because those are stories that are taken from EC Comics. The other ones are written by Robert Bloch. So I can see if you're thinking EC Comics terms and then you go to Robert Bloch world, it's going to be a little bit different. So maybe that, you know, maybe that's something to do with it, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just speculating here. But
so next is The House That Dripped Blood, which I watched on Shudder.
Yep.
And I actually had a lot of fun with this one. I think my expectations were lower for this. I don't know why, because I'd watched all the other Amicus films already, or because I had heard about Asylum so much that I thought that was sort of the crown jewel of the Amicus anthology series. And I hadn't heard of The House That Dripped Blood that much. So I think maybe I thought, oh, this must be one of the lesser titles. But I had a good time with it. I am particular, as goofy as it is, I really liked the last story with one of the doctors, John Pertwee, becoming a vampire, not just because Ingrid Pitt is in it, even though she makes everything so much better, but I just, the sequence where he puts on the cape and wakes up and is sort of flying was not only very reminiscent of a similar scene in Lost Boys, which I'm not suggesting that they ripped off the House that Dripped Blood, but there are a lot of similarities. I just thought the thing was, I thought it was so like goofy in a charming way. I really enjoyed that segment.
You know, I think we're hitting on a possible theorem, an Amicus theorem here, because this is the first one that I watched, and I had the toughest time getting into this one. Okay. Out of all of the one, yeah. And I agree with you that the last segment is great, but there are some of the earlier ones which I enjoyed enough. I didn't get into as well at the one with Peter Cushing.
Oh, the wax museum.
The waxwork one. Yeah, it was okay, but it didn't quite do it for me. I don't know. Maybe it was just the the limited special effects for what they could do, and the first one with the author and his wife.
Yeah.
They're all completely in the template, solid. Solid structure, solid twists, predictable or not. I think maybe that was me getting into the rhythm of these things, and I had not yet, hadn't yet gotten to the point where maybe if I watch it now, I'd be like, oh, this is great. I'm living the Amicus life.
Well, again, that first segment with Denholm Elliott, I was thinking of The Dark Half actually, because it involves, a fictional character who is suddenly taken some sort of physical embodiment. Now, again, there is a twist to that, which was less interesting than it was when it was, hey, this guy actually exists now. And the Wax Museum one, I wonder if it would have had a greater impact in like 1971 when it came out. I agree that the special effects are a little bit limited, and I feel like we've seen variations on that same creepy wax figure thing enough since then. I mean, obviously Mystery of the Wax Museum and House of Wax predate this one, but I was watching it thinking about, something like Tourist Trap, which does a similar story so much better and makes these sort of wax mannequins, or just mannequins in general, way creepier. So it didn't have quite the same impact as some of the other similar variations on that story.
Yeah, I also have this thing, it's probably just me, where I never think that like action figures, wax figures, anything that's supposed to look like someone looks enough like the person that impressed by. I don't know what it is. Like, it could be like the most, it could be like a $7,000, 1-to-3 scale model replica of a famous actor. I'm like, yeah, the nose isn't right. I mean, whatever it is, I'm like, I'm never impressed by action figures or dolls, or I don't know what it is. It's me 100%. So when it's like, oh, he's supposed to be obsessed with this woman who looks exactly like this woman he knew, I'm thinking, nah, the cheeks aren't quite right. And that kind of takes the wind out of it a little bit.
What did you think of? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. No, wait, no, I was gonna move on to the other segment from the Sweets to the Sweet, which is with Christopher Lee. I think I like the vibe of that one. I'm not 100% sure that I was with it to the very end. I'm all for creepy kids and stuff. I feel like that maybe they could have done, I don't know, could have gone a little bit further with it, or set it up in a slightly different way, or maybe I watched it the wrong time of day. Who knows?
I mean, Christopher Lee is kind of what carries me through that, because it's not great and the twist isn't particularly interesting. Christopher Lee ends up carrying me through it, and I didn't realize it at the time until I was rewatching Tales from the Crypt that Chloe Franks, the young actress who plays his daughter, then shows up again in Tales from the Crypt as Joan Collins' daughter in All Through the House. I was like, wait a second, that's the same creepy kid from The House That Dripped Blood.
Yeah, so I think all in all, The House That Dripped Blood is a good representation of what one of these movies is and can be. And I think it's the, well, I don't want to say it's the only, I keep saying things are the only ones, but it's not a case of someone with a group of people in a room saying, this is what's going to happen to you, or this is how you die. It's an actual kind of the whole wraparound is a police detective who's trying to investigate the disappearance of the character from the last segment.
Right.
And then the other cops saying, well, you don't want to go in that house because here's all this stuff that happened in there, which is, I thought, a pretty good wraparound way to do it. Very, very proper and British.
Yeah, but a different enough from the other ones that, yeah, yep, like totally. You say, it kind of stands out. So following The House That Dripped Blood, we get Tales from the Crypt, which I hadn't seen for years, and I grew up watching the HBO show and then reading the comics when they started reprinting the old DC comics. I was collecting all of those, so I'm pretty well-versed in Tales from the Crypt and didn't see the movie probably until the Scream Factory Blu-ray had come out a couple of years ago, and ended up having, you know, a lot of fun with it and really digging it. But it is fascinating that, you know, Tales from the Crypt and William Gaines and EC Comics are so distinctly American in terms of what they represented in 1950s pop culture and the creation of the Comics Code Authority and the whole sort of panic that was taking place in the 1950s, which I don't know if you've ever read it. There's an amazing book written about it called The 10-Cent Plague. That's all about the panic that took place, especially in the 1950s over comic books, but it extends beyond that. So they're so American. So then to see this adapted, and I don't feel like there's not a case of culture shock. Like, it doesn't really feel to me that this is wrong. I think the way that these are put together, they feel, you know, British. Maybe it's just because of the locations and the casting and stuff. They don't feel like American stories that are being done wrong. But it's an interesting case of translation. And, you know, this one is maybe most famous for opening with "and all through the house," or is it just "all through the house"? I can't remember. The Joan Collins
let's
one.
Let's say it's "and all through the house."
It's "and all through the house," which was the second episode of Tales from the Crypt ever. And I feel like the one that everyone thinks of when you mention Tales from the Crypt, because it's Mary Ellen Trainer and Larry Drake as the crazy Santa. And it was first adapted in this anthology with Joan Collins and stylized in a very different way, because it's all done in very bright interior light, which I thought was an interesting, if you watch the Zemeckis episode, which is longer, it's all dark, you know, the house is lit by fireplace and it takes place a little bit outside. And so it's a very different representation of a similar story. What were your thoughts on Tales from the Crypt?
I really loved it. I really loved Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror. Maybe it's a part of the that Blu-ray sheen of you know, buying the,
right,
the Scream Factory
right.
set.
I better love this.
I don't want to say, like, oh, this it looks and sounds so much better than that 280p YouTube video that I watched. But it's I really like both of them. I'm, you know, big fan of the TV show and the comic series, what little I've read, and the vibe I think totally works for me. I didn't think that this version of An All Through the House is as good as the Zemeckis one.
No.
If only because, I mean, I think there are things that work really well about it. I think Joan Collins is great in it. I think that sort of kind of stuffy marriage that ends in murder is British in a very convincing way to me. I don't know why. I guess the she gets so kind of calm partway through when she's going around trying to deal with the husband thing and not as concerned with the guy who's right outside the window that it kind of takes the wind out of it for me. But I think you can't beat the reveal at the end. And I actually went and read the original comic version actually just tonight, because I picked up one of the Vault of Horror collections they have on for Kindle. It was on like $10, so I was reading some of that. And it's a great story. even maybe slightly roughly told is super super good. So the other ones in there, what are some other good ones in there? First off, this is I'm not 100% down with the version of the Crypt Keeper they have here, but I like that it's like just a guy in a cloak sitting on, like, you know, just a British guy who's probably a solicitor who, you know, this is what he does in his spare time.
it is weird that they, again, didn't go, they're not going to go the way that the HBO show did, which of course is this great decomposed little skeleton puppet who, you know, makes puns and cracks wise and stuff, but it's not even an attempt to really replicate the Crypt Keeper from the pages of the EC Comics. No. It's just, like you said, a guy in a cloak. It's Ralph Richardson, but still. Yeah, he's just sort of there as a storyteller. And for me, this is an example where the device, in terms of these people essentially in purgatory and the reveal, okay, actually you did all die, you know, they think they're foreseeing a possible death, and instead he says, no, this is really what happened. And the reason that it works, I think, the best in this one for me is because of the way that certain things are sort of seeded throughout, like Joan Collins losing the brooch, and then we find out later. You know, that was the gift from the husband right before she killed him, or actually she opens it after she kills him. So I like the reveal, even though we know exactly what it's going to be. I thought it was handled better in this segment than in some of the other ones. But I liked the reveal in the car accident one when we see that he's all decomposed. I mean, again, we kind of know what it is. And the ending suggests, is he just on a constant loop then? Because
I don't know.
He has the accident again.
Yeah. I mean, I assumed it was, you know, he had a prophetic dream.
Right.
That he thought was just a dream, right, that ended up being. Who knows?
But then, is that just another dream? Does it just keep going? I really like the monkey's paw one. And
yeah,
the reason I like it is not, you know, it's funny how quickly they accept the reality of, like, oh, it's a thing. It's like a monkey's paw. Yeah, let's make some wishes. Oh, wait. Like, they're so quick to buy in. And, you know, they have a limited amount of story time. But I thought the way that each new reveal was handled, in particular, the last one, was really well done.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that they kind of went out of their way to say, oh, this is just like that story, the monkey ball, one we based this off of. I mean, it really builds. I like that, you know, he basically says, oh, here's this thing, maybe this could work, but we probably shouldn't use it. And then his wife goes ahead and makes her wish. It's kind of a bit of a blundering approach to the monkey's paw story, while having the full information of, this is what happened in the monkey's paw, so
right,
don't do this.
Right.
Oh, you mean like this? Wait, don't you? Yeah, and the actual, not only the final reveal, but, you know, what she does at the end and how it makes things even worse.
Yeah,
is just really, really great.
I love this notion too, that, like, the unseen force that is fate has a real shitty sense of humor and just loves irony. Like, in the Wishmaster movies, I get it, because it's a guy who's a demon, and so he's deliberately going out of his way to, like, twist it around so that you're punished, you know. But when it's just this idea of, oh, you make a wish on a monkey's paw and some unseen force is still going to find a way to screw you over, I find that fascinating.
Usually in these stories, it's someone who deserves it in some way.
Although, which these people didn't really seem to.
I mean, it sounded like he lost a lot of people's money and was going to have to declare bankruptcy.
Okay.
So, you know.
That might have gone past me, honestly.
Yeah. He's a capitalist, Patrick, so he, of course, deserves it, whatever happens to him. But that was great. I think Tales from the Crypt has my favorite Peter Cushing performance of all this.
Oh, interesting. See, I felt like he was kind of miscast.
Oh, I mean, he totally worked for me. I felt a lot of sympathy for the character in the segment Poetic Justice, where he plays out of a retired, or I guess, no, he's not yet retired. He's a garbage man who kind of drags the values down in the neighborhood, even though he's super nice to kids and is very, you know, well-meaning and all this kind of stuff, and this stuff that, you know, what his neighbors across the street find ways to kind of screw him over in hopes that he'll sell his property and move out. I liked that segment. I mean, it definitely starts in a very kind of sweet gee whiz British sort of way, and then ends in a really horrific Tales from the Crypt way.
A shocking moment of gore in this PG rated horror movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's some pretty rough stuff in the one we just talked about.
Yeah.
Although not quite. I feel this is the one that felt most like it would be at home as part of the HBO series.
Right,
and the story sort of felt a little familiar to me, so I'm not sure if they did do a similar story. It's been such a long time since I watched the HBO series.
I think they did, actually.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
When Peter Cushing does read that last poem, the one that sort of pushes him over the edge, I agree that he is completely sympathetic. But early on, I just felt like, oh, this feels like a case of Peter Cushing wanting to stretch and insisting that he play this part, which I think is actually what happened.
That's fine. I like Peter Cushing, so.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I'm good with it. Again, it worked. It works. It's good.
I will say, I think the last segment might be my least favorite.
Okay. I mean, I think the implication of the finale, of what happens at the end,
yeah,
is really chilling, and as it was in the version of the same story that ended up being a Tales from the Crypt episode. But it seems like it takes a little too long to kind of build up to that moment.
It's the longest segment. Yeah, it's about a half hour.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's called Blind Alleys.
Right.
I think that's a that's a story from Tales from the Crypt. That one works, I think, pretty well being told from a British point of view, because it has that sort of, you know, proper selfish upper class British kind of sensibility, where, you know, there's this guy who thinks that he's better than the man he's taken care of, and where that ends, you know, where that leads him. It doesn't feel, it feels, I mean, I think you're right in saying these all kind of feel British, even though they're American. They find a way to make it work.
Well, it didn't really occur to me until we were just talking about each of these, but almost all of the stories is really, maybe not the car accident one, but they're very much about class, which is interesting. I didn't really put that together, but.
Who knew from an American comic brought over an American producer and then translated into these British things and then discussed by a couple of Americans.
That's right. We are dead.
We are dead.
Next is Asylum, which was a film I've been hearing about for years. This came out in 1972. Again, a compilation of stories from Robert Bloch. And I watched this on Shudder as well. No, it's no longer on Shudder. I think I watched this on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, that's where I saw it.
It used to be on Shudder, and then I was bummed to find that they took it off. I feel like my favorite, and I liked this overall, obviously, and not just because there's a segment that features both Charlotte Rampling and Britt Eklund, but my favorite segment, I think, was the first one, which is called Frozen Fear, because it involves a bunch of body parts being chopped up and wrapped in paper that are still moving. And I just love that image and the way that that story progresses. I really thought was dark in a very funny way, which these aren't always, you know.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, major props to the lead character in that story for his rapping abilities. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, it's one of those things where, like, you wrap the skis for someone for Christmas and then look like the skis. I mean, you wrap the arm looks like an arm. The head looks like a head. The snozzberries taste like snozzberries. It's amazing. Please, what were you saying?
And then we get another segment with Peter Cushing once again and an evil mannequin.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I think the Weird Tailor might be my favorite of this. I don't know why. I guess sort of just the general mystery of it. Even if you can kind of tell where it's going, just the idea of, you know, I want you to make this suit, but you can only make it in the middle of the night, and you must follow these rules exactly.
It's the setup is weird and interesting. And I like the performance of the guy playing the tailor. And then there's another one that has the word mannequins in the title, which is the last segment, called Mannequins of Horror. But they're not really mannequins. They're like small puppets. And I was so distracted the whole time watching that segment, because I really feel like Charles Band and Full Moon Features owes some royalties, because it is so similar to the original Puppet Master, in particular, in terms of the idea of this guy who makes these little, you know, puppets and sort of puts his own body, soul, mind, whatever you want to call it, into these puppets, is right out of Puppet Master. So I was so distracted by that I can't even remember if I liked the segment.
Yeah, the weird thing about that segment is that it blends into the wraparound story so much that I actually didn't realize until kind of looking things up later on that it counts as its own segment.
No, I thought the same thing at a certain point. I was like, so this one's done, right? Oh, no, we're still in this segment. Okay.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I thought Asylum overall was pretty strong. I mean, it's probably really is kind of on par with even some of the ones that I wasn't as impressed with. I mean, there are, I guess it depends on how you gauge the success of each one of these movies, even the segments. Like, I could tell almost from, you know, the get-go what was going to happen in most of these. Like the Lucy Comes to Stay, the one you mentioned with Brett Eklund and Charlotte Rampling.
Right.
You know, it's pretty obvious right away what's going on, but they handle it pretty well.
Sure.
I guess it can't just be about the surprise. I mean, being able to anticipate what's going to happen does not diminish the enjoyment of these things once you get in the headspace for these portmanteaus.
Well, and part of the problem is just knowing that there is a twist, which we know, you know, based on the fact that all of the stories are like this, or that all of these anthologies are like this, automatically has you anticipating what the twist is as soon as the premise is introduced.
I believe that's called the Shyamalan.
Trying to figure out, like, okay, how are you gonna yank it out from under me? Which is why I appreciate sometimes anthologies that don't necessarily depend on the twist, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Although I missed a twist if it's not there.
Well, sure.
It's a catch-22,
right?
That's a thing, right? People say.
I believe so. So is the Vault of Horror then the last one that we're going to talk about?
It looks like
because
it is.
Because we didn't watch that last one.
That's right.
One. Yeah.
Yes. So Vault of Horror.
Once again, based on an EC comic and sort of a sequel to Tales from the Crypt, although not actually. It's just, hey, we had success with Tales from the Crypt, so let's make a Vault of Horror. Why they never got around to a Haunt of Fear, I can't say. This one's directed by Roy Ward Baker, who had also directed Asylum. So you're going to have to help me a little bit on this one because I did not rewatch this one. I tried, but I ran out of time.
Sure.
But it comes as a double feature with Tales from the Crypt from Scream Factory and is a Blu-ray that's well worth picking up to get both of these movies, including the uncut version of Vault of Horror. Is that the one that you watched?
It is, and I never got around to checking out to see what
the differences are.
Yes,
yeah,
I don't
have no idea.
I mean, the Blu-ray, which I have here, actually comes, it's got Tales from the Crypt, which is great. It's got Vault of Horror. It's got three versions of Vault of Horror. It's got the uncut Vault of Horror, the theatrical Vault of Horror, and then the 1:33 open mat version of the uncut version of Vault of Horror.
Yes.
I don't know what the best one was. I watched the one on the first disc is the one that I watched. And I actually watched that one first. I actually watched Vault of Horror before I watched Tales from the Crypt. I don't know why. It just worked out that way. Okay. I think I was saving Tales from the Crypt for a certain, I wanted to be the perfect time. You know? I was saving myself for Tales from the Crypt. But Vault of Horror, so I watched that first, which is, you know, I think you watch them either way. I imagine watching one in front of the other makes the other one seem like, oh, this is, you know, this is ripping off the other one. But it's so Vault of Horror begins, I think, with just a wonderful sequence that I had me laughing because you have this really, you know, kind of sinister sounding music over this long shot of the Thames River. And then a really long shot again of just four or five guys getting into an elevator, and it's five guys getting into an elevator with this really sinister sounding music over it, which is, I mean, once you know where the movie's going, it makes sense. But at the beginning, it's just like these guys are getting in an elevator, and the music sounds like, you know, Mike Myers is stalking. it's just five guys in a lift, and you know, once they go all the way down and they get to the part where they start telling the stories, it makes sense. But it's a wonderful. I could see a very, very specific niche version of YouTube where someone just takes that and just puts different music on top of it, and just to see what it would,
it
would change the the tone of that scene. Because this is really just a Rorschach test of movies. It's five guys in an elevator.
But. Well, and anytime one of these anthologies opens with people getting in an elevator, it's like, well, I think I can guess where this is going. Right. The elevator is not a particularly subtle image. So the first story in this is called Midnight Mess, and I cannot for the life of me remember, because it's so familiar to me. Obviously, I've seen it in Vault of Horror. I feel like I've either read this story in the comic, because this was not adapted into an episode of the TV show, right?
I don't know. I don't think so. Okay. Apparently, it was from Tales from the Crypt. It was one. I mean, it was a story from Tales from the Crypt. And this, or there are probably kind of richer segments in all these movies, but I think this one might be my favorite.
It's just a good one. Yeah.
It goes, you know, hits the ground running, and it's not super long. It's really good. So there's a guy who is tracking down his sister, because he wants to settle up some family business. And the PI that he hires says that she's living in this weird town. And he goes, and the first thing pretty much anyone says is that he better get inside before it gets dark. It kind of goes. And so it already sets up this mystery, which is cool. And then I like both where it goes, how it reveals, what it reveals, and the closing shot was really kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I like that one a lot.
The next one is, you know, I feel like each of these anthologies has one segment that's just about a bad relationship between a husband and a wife.
Right.
And this one is one that I like more than most of them, honestly, just because of the punchline, even though, once again, we can kind of tell where it's going. But Terry Thomas as the bastard husband in this one. Is very awful and entertaining, you know.
Yeah. He's awful to his wife, who he really just sees as a housekeeper, but at the same time, he's just being super particular and just doesn't value her. He's abusive, but not abusive in a traditional sense.
Correct.
He's not
Correct.
Cheating on her.
Right.
He's not, you know, he's not hitting her. He just really wants her to keep the house neat and make sure there is, you know, tomato puree in the cupboard. And, you know, who can't sympathize with that? You know, you get the tick marks on the thing, so you know. Even though it goes exactly where you think, I mean, it's a very funny segment. The way it builds up to the ending, I think, is great. So,
right.
Yeah.
And again, the punchline is a fairly obvious one, but worth the wait, you know.
Totally.
And then the next segment, once again, I'm torn if I've read this, because This Trick Will Kill You wasn't adapted for the show, was it?
I don't think so. Okay. Apparently, This Trick Will Kill You and Midnight Mess were from issues 33 and 35 of Tales from the Crypt, respectively.
So I must have read...
If you had that collection,
right?
Maybe you had it there.
Yeah, they must have all come from the same issue or a couple of issues. Yeah, because I the title is so familiar, and even the story is fairly familiar, but I can't remember if I liked the actual segment.
I liked it.
Okay.
It's about another really bad marriage, although in this case it's two bad people who are married. A magician and his assistant, I think they're married, and they go to India to try to find a new trick. And after kind of humiliating some locals, by kind of revealing how the guy is doing the tricks that he's doing, which I think is a very unmagician thing to do. Like I feel like that's frowned upon. Most of my, you know, magic knowledge comes from Arrested Development, so I could be wrong, but, yeah, it's and I think what it builds to, some of the imagery, what happens to the woman when she climbs the rope, and, you know, maybe suffers a little bit from special effects technology of the 70s when it comes to the finale, but I liked it. I mean, do you generally remember what happens in it? I feel,
yeah, well, now that you mentioned when the girl climbs the rope, that sparks something in my head.
And I know that we've probably, you know, been a little cavalier about dropping some of the stuff in some of these segments. I'm trying to, I think because I like, if it's a segment that I really like in the movie, one of the movies I really like, I'm trying to keep it at least a little bit shrouded in mystery.
Well, yeah, probably. if our goal here is to try to turn people on to some of these movies, it doesn't make sense to necessarily spoil every aspect.
I hope we haven't spoiled too many in the past. If we have, sorry, we're not going to go re-record this again. Or will we? No, we won't.
I feel like my memory, as I'm looking up the summaries, I so wish I had had an opportunity to rewatch this movie, because I feel like as I'm looking at the summaries of each of these, that I liked this one more than Tales from the Crypt. But am I wrong to think that?
No, I mean, I'm rereading. I think this actually has a little bit more of a sense of humor. I think Tales from the Crypt is pretty grim in a lot of ways. I mean, you think about, you know, you've got like ghouls and, you know, blood and, you know, really kind of horrific stuff. And, you know, there's people die and bad things happen in this one, but it's done with a little bit more humor than each. Even I think pretty much all of these so far, looking at them, have, well, maybe not this Strictly Kill You, but I mean, Midnight Mess and The Neat Job both have a kind of dark sense of humor about them, certainly.
Yeah.
And the fourth one, Bargain and Death, kind of has a slapstick element that, while deadly, is amusing, certainly.
The punchline to that one I remember liking a lot. And again, that's a pretty familiar story in terms of, oh, if I paint the thing, that's the thing that will happen, you know.
Which one's that? Is that the last one, Drawn and Quartered?
I remember liking that one a lot, and I just remember Tom Baker being a lot of fun in that.
Yeah, because that one feels like it's probably the longest one, because I remember quite a bit of stuff happening. Yeah, Tom Baker, super great. What happens to all of his to all the people he needs to exact revenge on?
Yes.
Really satisfying, creative. You know, obviously very kind of, this is what you would do if you were doing what he was doing. You know, there's a limited number. I mean, I guess there's a lot of things you could do to a painting, but those are the ones I would do. Probably. Yeah. That is a good one.
These were fun. It was kind of fun to. I recognize that it might be better to spread them out, but I actually think it was kind of fun to watch them all close together. Like I said, unfortunately, they do run together a little bit, so I'm having a hard time because we're talking about, you know, more than 20 different short segments, so it's hard to remember exactly what all of them were, especially when the beats are pretty similar in each of them.
If someone listening to this is unfamiliar with these movies, wants to check them out, I would 100% recommend the Scream Factory double feature of Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror. Even if you just watch those two, I think those are probably my favorite of all these. Mine too. Even just looking back through the list of the segments on those two films, it's definitely like, oh yeah, those are all pretty solid.
Yeah. Then two of the other ones are streaming on Shudder and one is on Amazon. So they're all
really,
accessible.
Do what I do. You bought the double set and then you are subscribing to Shudder and Amazon. You can watch five out of seven.
Right. And then if you have YouTube, apparently you can just watch the.
Look, I saw that it was there. If I had had a little more time, I was going to rent From Beyond the Grave on Amazon, which is like a $3 rental. I probably will still do it at some point this the last week of the month, because I do want to check it out.
Yeah, just to close it out.
Yeah, I gotta see this thing through. But yeah, no, I'm kind of surprised it took me this long to get around to watching these movies, because I didn't grow up watching Tales from the Crypt when it was on. I, you know, burned through it at some point when I, you know, got borrowed the DVDs like 10 years back. I've always, you know, like I say, I've always loved twist ending stories. In comic form, even better. Like I've got a real affection for this kind of storytelling. So I'm glad that I was able to, you know, explore some of the most not effective. I mean, they kind of set a lot of the rules for at least the modern anthology. And I have to wonder if the fact that I feel like I have felt like anthology films are more bad than good is because of some more modern ones. Like, I have to admit that I'm not a big fan of the VHS movies.
Understandably.
I think one of the few, I mean, Tales from Halloween is great. Trick or Treat obviously is great. So there you got some of those that really kind of, like, you know, make me feel good about the genre. What was the Southbound? Is that what it's
Southbound
called?
Southbound is one. Yeah.
It's really good. I like that one too. So I feel like I've started to see some good ones.
Yeah. They've kind of Holidays, XX. They've been, which isn't to say that they're all great, but
no,
we've gotten more of them recently. No, there were like maybe two or three segments. I remember the Father's Day one being incredible in Holidays with Jocelyn Donahue. But yeah, most of them I did not love.
Yeah. I mean, I think probably it just I probably had such a bad taste in my mouth from the VHS movies because it combines, you know, both bad anthology with found footage,
right,
which really kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Sure.
If you love them, great. You know, good on you. But they just weren't really for me.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some really good stuff here. And I think what's nice about these is that they're a good palate cleanser if you've watched a lot of really gory stuff. If you watched everyone get ripped apart from, you know, head to toe in the Hatchet movies, and you want to watch something with marginally less gore, or at least less convincing gore.
Yes, for sure, less convincing.
You know, when blood looks like it's not even red paint, it's like orange.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
like a crayon that melted in the sun.
Exactly. Like it's not even, they're not even pretending that this is you know, something you can, I could easily eat a meal while watching these movies. I can't say for every movie, horror movie out there, but yeah.
Awesome.
I like horror movies a whole lot. I like horror. No, I said that. Wait, I like anthology movies. Wait, I like portmanteau movies.
There it is. There it is. Well,
call me Mr. Portmanteau.
Thank you again for talking about these movies with me. It was fun to go through them and to talk about them with you. As always, you can find more of our stuff at fthismovie.com. We're on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and YouTube, and you can find us in iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you haven't already done so, please take a moment to rate and review the show, especially if you're a fan. And you can always email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Eric, remind us once again where we can hear more of your awesome music, like the song we heard earlier.
You can rewind 48 minutes. I don't know how long. Or you can go to SoundCloud.com/my name with a hyphen in between, Eric-Asperschlager. And if you follow me on Twitter, I will post all the time about them. And then you will unfollow me on Twitter and they just go to the SoundCloud thing. So.
There's a mute option.
There is a mute. That's right. I highly encourage you to mute me on Twitter.
We will be back again this week with some more Scary Movie Month podcasts because it's October and we are the gift that keeps on giving this month because I will just podcast until I drop dead. So look forward to some more shows this week. Thank you guys again for listening. And just a reminder, Eric and I have been dead this whole time. Yeah.